Sota, Perek Aleph, Mishnah Hey, 1:5. So the Mishnah says, Im Amra Tamea Ani, if she admits that she was infidelitous, so the consequences are, Shoveres Ksuba Vyotzes. Nothing more than she loses her Ksuba and she goes out. Goes out meaning that she gets a get and she is divorced. Not more than that. Meaning the point here is that there's no death penalty, although the verse prescribes a death penalty for infidelity, for adultery, I should say. That would require, of course, witnesses, warning, and certainly we never execute anybody based on our own admission. So that would be the consequences. Now, in terms of the word shoveres, in modern Hebrew, that sounds like it means break. So shoveres ksubasa means her ksuba is broken. That's not what it means, though. This is referring to a shover is a receipt. And we're talking about a situation in which, as the Gemara in Ksuvas explains, there were certain places where they never wrote a ksuba. They just relied on the basic rules that govern all ksubas, the same kind of thing, Tanai Bezdin. And that being the case, women didn't get ksuba. That is, if they got divorced, they got the standard ksuba payout, and similarly, the obligations of the husband were the standard ksuba obligations, and that's that. If that happens, the problem is we're concerned that she'll be let loose now, and then she'll come claim later on she never got paid out her ksuba. So because of that, we give him a shover, meaning we give him a receipt, which he could present to a court if he's ever summoned to one, to show he doesn't need to pay. So normally a shover means that it says, I paid 200 zuz on such a date, and that would be his receipt that he paid the 200 zuz, so we wouldn't have to pay a second time. Here, of course, he's not paying, and therefore what the shover would say is actually an admission of hers, an admission that says she was infidelitous, and because of her adultery, she forfeited her ksuba, and he'll never have to pay it, and that's what he'll get. Now, that wouldn't be applicable in a place where the conduct is, as we know it today, that women get a ksuba. Once a woman gets a ksuba, there's no reason to write the receipt. Instead, what happens is, the only way a woman can get paid out on her ksuba is to present her ksuba. So if we simply tear up her ksuba, she can't claim it anymore, and therefore, rather than giving a receipt to him, we just tear her ksuba, and now she can't ever claim on him again. The Yotzes, she goes out, meaning she gets divorced. According to Rambam, there's actually a technical requirement for him to divorce her. The reason, because since now they can never sleep together ever again, that's certainly a din of the Torah. So the Rambam says it's now din derabanan, requiring him to divorce her, because if she's lingering around there, they'll come to sleep together again, perhaps. Others, like Tosfos, say that's not necessarily the case. He doesn't have to divorce her if he doesn't want to divorce her, but why in the world wouldn't he? So in any case, that's that. Now, Vim Amra Taharani. The other side of the coin is, if the woman, all four of those techniques in the previous Mishnah don't work, she sticks to her guns, she insists she's Tahora, and therefore she wants to drink those bitter waters to prove her innocence. So now we go to the next stage of the process. So it says, Malin Osa Lishar HaMizrach Shal Pesach Shar Nicanor. We bring her up to the eastern gate of the Azara, of the temple courtyard, at the entrance to Shar Nicanor. So now, first of all, bring her up. She was just at the Sanhedrin Agadol, you know, in the Bezin Agadol there in Jerusalem, but the Sanhedrin, which actually meets there right by Shar Nicanor, so in the temple complex. So that being the case, the Gemara says what happens is we take her, we want to sort of wear her out, and hoping that by wearing her out, she'll come to admit what she did. So, and therefore, we take her down off the Har HaBayis, off the Temple Mount, and bring her back up again all the way to the entrance of the temple courtyard. So now, you'll recall that the temple itself has, like, on the Har HaBayis, on Temple Mount, has, like, two basic zones. There's the Ezras Nashim, which is the area where everyone can gather. They had the candelabras over there. There was the dancing over there on Simchas Beis HaShoeva. They had the four lishkos in the corners, and so on. And then, at the dividing between the Ezras Nashim and the proper Azara, the first stage, which is called the Ezra Sral, there's a gate, a golden gate. That gate there, gold-covered gate, is called Shar Nicanor. So just, again, when we say eastern gate, we don't mean the eastern gate of the Temple Mount. That would be called Shar Shushan. We mean the gate that divides between the Ezra's Nashim and Ezra's Yisrael on top of those 15 stairs at the entrance to the Azara. So it's called Nicanor, Shar Nicanor, because there's a story in the Gemara in Yuma that this fellow Nicanor went down to Alexandria in Egypt. He commissioned, as part of a team, I guess, to get these two beautiful doors made. On the way back in the boat, There was a storm, and they threw one of the two doors overboard to lighten the boat so it should survive the storm. And then that didn't help, so they were going to throw the second one overboard. He tied himself to the doors and said, no way. If you throw the doors over, you're throwing me over with them. And with that, miraculously, the storm subsided. And when he got to Eretz Yisrael, the port, and he was lamenting having lost one of the doors, miraculously, that door floated on over. So there, he has these two doors, and because he effected this miracle, because of his Mesiras Nefesh of the doors, they're named after him. So Shar Nicanor is the entrance to the Eretz Yisrael there in the Azara. And that's a requirement that she has her procedure done over there, because the verse requires that she does it. It says Vehimid Hakohen Esa Isha Lifnei Hashem. She has to be there Lifnei Hashem, before God, and of course Hashem is everywhere. So we understand Lifnei Hashem means before Hashem, meaning like there in the Beis Hamikdash, there in the Kodesh, and so. But we can't bring her into the Azara proper, because we're going to basically dishevel her and uncover her hair and uncover her clothing. So we're not going to do that in the Azara. So it has to be outside the Azara, but at the entrance of the Azara. And the gates at the eastern entrance there have a very useful setup in which the doorway there is not invested with the Kedusha of the Azara. Typically, if you have a doorway, so and that separates between a lower and higher level of Kedusha, the rule in the Beis Hamikdash would be that the doorways have the higher level of sanctity, but Shar Nicanor is an exception to that rule, and they did not invest the area in the doorway there with Kedusha on purpose, so we could do something like the Sota procedure in that doorway. Now, parenthetically, the Mishnah says that serves other purposes as well. The Mishnah says, not only do we do Shisham Mashkin as a Sota, we don't just give the suspected sota to drink over there. Also, mataran esa yodos u mataran esa mitzorayim. We also use that Shar Nicanor zone for the purification process of a yodos, woman who gave birth, and a mitzora, that's mitzorayim. So the story is, again, very briefly, a yoledes, a woman who gives birth. So after 7 days for a boy or 14 days for a girl, it's true that she becomes tahora, meaning she goes to the mikveh and she's muteras labayla, she can be with her husband again, but actually she's still called the mechusar kippurim, lacking full atonement, and like still like a shlish letuma, and that means she can't go into the Beis Hamikdash proper, meaning the Azara, nor can she eat from kalchim, like a korban pesach, etc., until she brings korbanos, which will happen after 40 or 80 days, I mean on the 41st or 81st day, 41 for a boy and 81 for a girl. So when that happens, so until she has to bring these they're birds, actually, in the case of Yoledes, or whatever. The truth is, it depends. It could be whatever. She has to bring her korbanos. So we have to do with her like in front of the korban. So therefore, she does it at the entrance to the Azara, because there she's again before her korban, but at the same time she is not in the Azara proper. Okay, we don't, the Mishnah doesn't mention, but the same would be true for a Zav or a Zava, if they would have to bring a Korban. Those are birds. And then, same goes with Mataranis, a Mitzorayim, a Mitzora also, they have this process, so then they have these two hair shavings, day one and day seven. So, after the second hair shaving on day seven, then they go to the mikvah, and then they're Tahor, but they're Mechusar Kippurim, meaning on day eight, they have to bring Korbanos, the Mitzora has to bring a Chatas, an Asham, and an Ola, and those animals, again, are brought, they have to be in presence of the korban, but they can't be in the Azara proper, so therefore they stand in the doorway. Now, the next step is, so now the Kohen now is going to essentially really disgrace this woman, in terms of, it says, V'chohen, the Kohen is Ochez b'vigadeha, he grabs, like, her clothing, like her frock by the collar, and he, like, rips it down, like tearing the collar and pulling it down, so exposing her chest. Vim nikru nikru, vim nifrumu nifrumu. And if it tears, so it tears. Now, what's the difference between nikru kriya and nifrumu priya? So there are different pshat. And given the Bartanura's first pshat is that to be nikru korea is a single big tear, whereas nifrumu means like multiple tears, like kind of into tatters, like multiple tears. Other pshatim that he brings and other Rishonim bring are that the difference between kriya and prima is maybe it's sideways, like, you know, vertical versus horizontal, or another pshat is that kriya, that prima is along the seam, whereas kriya is like not on the seam, where it's torn. The point is, it doesn't matter. Whatever happens, happens. We just tear it down on her. And also, adshu megala es liba, until her chest's exposed. Now, the reason for this is based on a pasuk. The pasuk says, ufara es rosh ha'isha. We have to uncover and dishevel the woman's hair. That's the next step in the Mishnah. But the fact that it could have said, ufara es rosha, her hair, her head, instead of saying that, it doesn't say we uncover her head. It says we uncover the head of the woman. We understand that the woman also has to be uncovered. So therefore, we're going to tear the clothing down to expose like her chest. Vesoser es sara, and we also uncover her hair, and if her hair is like braided, we unbraid it. So she looks disheveled, and again, sort of really denigrated and humiliated, and that's part of the process. Now, the reason we're doing that is for twofold. First of all, we really want her to admit what she did. So facing the thought of having to go through this will make her, and if she admits she won't have to go through it in the first place, it's certainly a good inducement. And even if we're past that, and now she's like, we're breaking her down, so she now feels, you know, she hopefully, as she's broken down by this horrible process, she will admit what she did. The other reason is because we want other people, other women, let's say, to see what's going on over here and realize this is the kind of fate that someone who behaved as she did behave faces. Again, even if she actually is technically going to come out on the other side of this ordeal okay and she'll drink the waters and survive because she actually didn't have a full-blown affair with another man, her behavior certainly was not appropriate, right? I mean, she was hanging out with a man to the point that her husband was picking up bad vibes and put her on notice with the kinui. And then she hung out with him again in private behind a closed door. So she had to tear. That's out of line, right? So she's totally behaved inappropriately. The question of how inappropriately. But the point is, we want to put everyone on notice this is not appropriate behavior. And this is what happens in such a scenario. So therefore, we do these very unpleasant things to her. Now, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Im haya liba na'e lo haya megaleu, vim haya sa'ara na'e lo haya sosro. Rabbi Yehuda says, this might not be such a good idea. He says, if we start like ripping her clothes and exposing her chest or uncovering her hair, and she's an attractive woman, so then the people who are looking on, like the Pirchei Kun, those, you know, the young Kohanim there, they might get all sorts of inappropriate ideas, and maybe she's going to even survive this ordeal. She'll be around. They'll have this Kohanim thinking about her and having Yehoram, and she's around, a recipe for disaster. So says Rabbi Yehuda, if this is an attractive woman with attractive chest, attractive hair, we don't expose that stuff so that nothing should happen. If you'll ask, wait a second, I just finished saying, learn that from a pasuk that we uncover her hair and uncover her chest. So if the Torah demands it, how could we not do it? So the answer is, Rabbi Yehuda would say, this is a situation where the rabbis can get involved and do what's called sheva al tasa. They could say, listen, we think this is a bad idea, given the situation. Therefore, while we're not going against the Torah explicitly, we're just saying sheva al tasa, sit on our hands and do nothing. We just won't do something the Torah said, because that's better than the alternative. In any case, the halacha does not follow Rabbi Yehuda. The halacha is like the Tana Kama. So indeed, her clothing does get torn and her hair does get uncovered and disheveled as part of the process. Again, to induce her to admit and to let everyone else who's watching see what a horrible situation she's in, so they themselves won't end up in such a situation.